Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is November 25, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments in fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Digital Yen would make crypto markets more lively, says CEO of Monex Group. Russian hospitalized after Bitcoin mining farm sets apartment on fire. Australia and Singapore to trial paperless trade using blockchain technology. VanEck launches Bitcoin exchange traded note on Deutsche Börse. BIS paper says there's potential to embed regulation into stablecoin systems. Bitcoin options market suggests investors preparing for all-time high. In India, a clash of digital innovation and internet censorship. Now let's get started. Digital Yen would make crypto markets more lively, says CEO of Monex Group. The chief executive of Monex Group, a financial services firm based in Tokyo, believes central bank digital currencies, CBDC, would be a boon for the cryptocurrency market. As reported by Reuters on Wednesday, Oki Matsumoto said the introduction of a digital version of the yen by the Bank of Japan, BOJ, would significantly enhance the interoperability of cryptocurrencies by smoothing the process of exchanging them into legal tender. Further, smaller brokers don't always have bank accounts, he said. Matsumoto's company manages a host of retail online brokerages in Japan and overseas and is also the owner of Tokyo-based cryptocurrency exchange Coincheck. The BOJ has been exploring the implications of CBDCs since creating a task force in July and naming its most senior economist, Kazushige Kamiyama, to lead the department in charge of digital currency research and development. A proof of concept trial is likely to take place in 2021, the central bank said recently. A digital yen would make the cryptocurrency market more lively, Matsumoto told Reuters. Russian hospitalized after Bitcoin mining farm sets apartment on fire. A poorly organized cryptocurrency mining farm has caused a fire in an apartment in St. Petersburg, Russia, and injured the operator, according to a 78.ru report citing the Ministry of Emergencies. The resident of the seven-bedroom apartment had apparently failed to set up sufficient cooling for his equipment, and was hospitalized due to severe burns to his hands, neck and back. The blaze took 4 fire engines, 16 firefighters and 40 minutes of work to put out, the report indicates. This is not the first incident of its kind in Russia. In December of 2019, a mining farm set up in a private car garage in the city of Vologda also caught fire, destroying all the equipment, CNews reported at the time. And, in February 2019, a larger fire destroyed 7 apartments in a residential building in the town of Artem, in the east of Russia. Illicit mining is a problem across the country. The federal power grid company Rosseti reported losing about $6.6 million last year because of the mining farms plugged into the electric grid illegally. In 2018, scientists in a nuclear research institute were arrested and later sentenced for using the institution's computers to mine Bitcoin. Australia and Singapore to trial paperless trade using blockchain technology. The Australian Border Force (ABF), the country's customs and border protection agency, wants to simplify cross-border trade with Singapore using blockchain technology. Under the Australia-Singapore Digital Economy Agreement (DIA), a blockchain trial was launched this week in an attempt to make it easier for businesses to digitally exchange trade documentation, per an ABF announcement on Wednesday. In collaboration with Singapore Customs and the Singapore Infocom Media Development Authority, IMDA, the blockchain trial aims to reduce administration costs and increase trade efficiency. Specifically, it will test digital verification platforms across both the ABF's Intergovernmental Ledger and IMDA's Trade Trust platform for sharing electronic documents, primarily certificates of origin. This initiative will incorporate paperless trading and secure digital exchange of trade information as part of the future architecture and design of an Australian trade single window, said ABF Commissioner Michael Outram. Businesses and regulators are expected to provide feedback on the process, with participation coming from the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, the Australian Industry Group, as well as financial institutions in Singapore, including ANZ Bank. Under the National Blockchain Roadmap led by the Department of Industry, Science, Energy and Resources, the ABF will give feedback on the lessons learned from the trial and present those in a discovery report slated for early 2021. The DIA, signed in August, sets out a framework for reducing barriers to digital trade, as well as fostering an environment where businesses and consumers can participate in the digitization of both economies. VanEck launches Bitcoin exchange-traded note on Deutsche Börse. VanEck, the New York-based investment management firm with around $50 billion in assets under management, has launched a Bitcoin exchange-traded note, ETN, for trading on the Deutsche Börse Xetra. Listed on the Frankfurt, Germany-based trading venue Wednesday, the VanEck Vectors Bitcoin ETN, VBTC, is physically backed by Bitcoin, BTC, minus 0.68%, and tracks the MVIS Crypto Compare Bitcoin VWAP Close Index. Bringing to market a physical, fully backed major exchange-listed Bitcoin ETP, exchange-traded product, was a top priority of our firm, Gabor Gerbaks, Director of Digital Asset Strategy at VanEck, said. We hope to serve many clients and partners in Europe, Asia and across the world using our innovative, investment-friendly and regulatory-conscious access vehicles. An ETN is a type of unsecured debt security payable to the bearer that tracks an underlying asset or an index. In effect, investors can gain exposure to an asset class without owning it. VanEck has partnered with Liechtenstein-based crypto custodian Bankfric for secure Bitcoin storage services. The total cost associated with managing and operating the instrument, or the total expense ratio, is 2%. The investment product is currently limited to investors from Germany, the Netherlands and the UK. There are now three Bitcoin ETNs listed on Xetra. Etc. Group was first listed in late June, followed by crypto ETP issuer 21 Shares in July. The firm's decision to launch an ETN comes after several failed attempts to win approval for an exchange-traded fund, or ETF, from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. BIS paper says there's potential to embed regulation into stablecoin systems. Regulatory responses to private, global stablecoins like Libra need to take into account the potential of the technology in payments, according to economists at the Bank for International Settlements, BIS. In a new working paper published Tuesday, Raphael Auer and John Frost, with Melbourne Law School finance lawyer Douglas Arner, drew a line between centralized and decentralized stablecoins, and said the potential of Libra to quickly be adopted by hundreds of millions of Facebook product users means regulators will need to adapt quickly. But the need to protect economies, the monetary system and consumers does not preclude public authorities themselves from embracing innovation. Global stablecoins offer benefits in cross-border payments in particular, according to the paper, and can challenge existing types of payment in e-commerce. Stablecoins are generally cryptocurrencies that attempt to maintain a value linked to fiat currencies, such as the US dollar, or other assets. The paper argues that technology in general offers the potential to increase supervision and provides the necessary tools for implementing and enforcing financial regulation. Specifically, stablecoins present the option to implement supervisory requirements and frameworks into the systems that operate them, paving a way for embedded supervision. Direct automated provision of data as a licensing or registration requirement for digital payment systems and markets provides an important opportunity to better use technology to achieve regulatory and supervisory objectives as well as reduce costs for market participants, the authors said. Stablecoins, particularly decentralized ones, also bring the possibility of building a robust monetary instrument into blockchain applications, such as for programmable money. The paper further examined whether alternative methods of payment, such as central bank digital currencies or fast payment systems, would be better suited for the functions that stablecoins seek to address, concluding they may be more effective in many cases. Still, baking frameworks for supervising and monitoring transactions directly into stablecoin systems has the potential to enhance the achievement of regulatory objectives, the authors said. Ironically, the technology was initially targeted with making the role of regulation unnecessary, they wrote. Bitcoin options market suggests investors preparing for all-time high. Activity in Bitcoin's options market shows investors are eyeing more gains for the top cryptocurrency, which is now just 2.8% below a record high. Bitcoin BTC, -0.68%, S1-month implied volatility, which is influenced by demand for call bullish and put bearish options, has risen to 81%, the highest level since May, having begun the month at 58%, according to data source SKU. The major part of the move, from 60% to 81%, occurred over the past 5 days. The 3- and 6-month implied volatility metrics have also jumped to multi-month highs. The recent spike in implied volatility is the result of a decent chunk of call buying, Vishal Shah, an options trader and founder of derivatives exchange Alpha 5, told CoinDesk. Investors are positioning for a bull market continuation. Further, put call skews, which measure the spread between the cost of puts and calls, are hovering near record lows. In other words, call options have been drawing more robust demand than puts, a sign of investor expectations being skewed to the bullish side. A week ago, the skews witnessed a bounce from lifetime lows as some traders bought put options following Bitcoin's sudden pullback from $18,400 to $17,100. However, the price dip was short-lived and the cryptocurrency rose above $19,000 on Tuesday. As such, call buying continued, pushing the skews lower once more. At press time, the one-month metric is seen at 24%, having reached a low of 27.8% on November 17. Meanwhile, Bitcoin is trading near $19,300, representing a nearly 1% gain on a 24-hour basis, according to the CoinDesk 20. Prices have risen by over $9,000 in the past 6.5 weeks. On-chain data also favors an extension of the ongoing bull run. For instance, Bitcoin's trade intensity, which measures the number of times each coin deposited on a spot exchange is traded, rose to 7.28 on Tuesday, the highest level since June 7, according to Chainalysis. The metric shows demand is still strong, and suggests the market could absorb a potential rise in supply. However, holding sentiment remains strong, as evidenced by the continued decline in the number of coins held on exchanges. Some investors, though, may look to take profits if and when the cryptocurrency scales the $20,000 mark. We could see massive movements in the Bitcoin price over Thanksgiving, said Peter Smith, co-founder and CEO of Blockchain.com in an emailed statement. A new all-time high won't be a surprise to some who've seen it as a not-if, but when scenario. It's an inevitability, but the world will take notice, and that's good for adoption. In India, a clash of digital innovation and internet censorship. Earlier this month, reacting to a decision by India's highest court, prominent comedian Kunal Kamra tweeted that India's Supreme Court is the most supreme joke of this country. The following day, local media reported that Attorney General K.K. Venugopal greenlighted court proceedings against the comedian, based on a few tweets criticizing the Supreme Court. The charge levied against him, contempt of court. Camara has refused to apologize for his tweets and local reports indicate proceedings have yet to begin. This should be shocking, but unfortunately it's not. In India, speaking out on the internet can be dangerous. Camara told CoinDesk that public figures can receive threats on social media, noting that users leaked his phone number on Twitter multiple times. They dox people, they release information sometimes. That's very normal, Camara said. With over 700 million internet users, India's booming digital market collides with internet censorship or outright bans. A similar dynamic plays out in India's crypto market. Trade on Indian crypto exchanges exploded earlier this year after the Supreme Court ruled to reverse the decision by the country's central bank, RBI, to ban local financial institutions from providing services to crypto firms. Now, just a few months later, the federal cabinet is reportedly discussing another potential ban. While regulators haven't clarified their stance on digital assets, they have expressed concern over the fiscal and monetary policy implications of fintech applications, including distributed ledger technology, DLT. Regulators have continued to push for local control over fintech payment platforms like WhatsApp Pay, which received approval from the Indian government only after owner Facebook agreed to store user data locally in India and not offshore. This is part of a much broader trend. Camara's case is the latest in a series of targeted attacks on internet users in the country. In a 2019 report, Freedom House warned internet freedom in India had declined for the fourth year in a row due to increasing arrests for online activity and frequent internet shutdowns. Localized internet shutdowns, restrictions on certain content like pornography, and wholesale bans on select mobile applications are some of the more visible ways in which the Indian government has sought to control the internet. According to a report by local media outlet Mint, in 2017 and 2018 at least 50 individuals were arrested for comments made on social media, largely for posts considered offensive to politicians. Digital India. India's digital ecosystems, from cloud computing to digital payments, are expanding. According to a report by consulting firm McKinsey, core sectors of the digital economy could double their contribution to India's GDP by 2025, adding up to $435 billion. On November 19, in his inaugural address at the Bengaluru Tech Summit, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi said his administration's governance model is technology-first, citing his Digital India initiative that launched 5 years ago. Digital India has become a way of life, particularly for the poor, marginalized and for those in government, Prime Minister Modi said. Yet, since 2014, government authorities have enforced about 450 regional internet shutdowns, with 134 in 2018 alone, according to a local internet shutdown tracker. Reasons for the crackdowns range from anticipated public unrest to curbing malpractice in school examinations. This blunt force approach can also lead to monetary loss for businesses and the disruption of web-based services. If there is no internet, there is no cryptocurrency, there is no blockchain, there is no technology. The internet is the crux. The longest internet shutdown ever recorded in a democracy was implemented by the Indian government in the disputed Kashmir region after the Modi government revoked the state's semi-autonomous status in August 2019. Indian officials justified the extended ban by calling it a necessary move to curb anticipated unrest that might have followed the administrative decision. While services were gradually restored, the blackout lasted over 7 months and disrupted some 12 million people's access to the internet. Qazi Zaid, chief editor of Free Press Kashmir, FPK, a local media outlet, said his newsroom had to be shuttered during the blackout. The primarily online publication halted all coverage and risked losing its online readership of over 300,000 people, Zaid told CoinDesk. When phone lines were restored, reporters called each other and dictated stories in an attempt to type and publish them, he added. But then we also realized that our audience is not there, Zaid said. While FPK managed to gradually come back online in May this year, the blackout had hit local businesses and dried up advertising revenue, Zaid said. He stressed that media censorship in Kashmir hasn't changed so much after last year's decision to revoke the region's special status, but it may have been further formalized under recent amendments to digital media policy, giving the government regulatory control over digital news and content providers. Loopholes. When the Indian government wants to shut the internet down, it sometimes invokes a 135-year-old law, the Indian Telegraph Act of 1885. The act was created by the British rulers in colonial India to curb uprisings, Indian journalist Sonia Falero said in a recent MIT Technology Review podcast. The law gives the government authority over all forms of electronic communications, in 1885 that meant telegrams, in the event of a public emergency. In 2017, the law was amended to specify that it allowed the temporary suspension of telecom services, Falero said. One of the many problems with the law, Falero added, was it did not specify or define public emergency, thus allowing the government to label any incident as such and shut down communications. Additionally, a controversial 2008 amendment to the Information Technology Act of 2000, Section 66A, allowed the government to imprison any person sending messages deemed offensive, menacing, false or causing annoyance through any electronic communications device. Using this law, in 2012 the government arrested two women for Facebook posts critical of the government. In 2015, the Supreme Court of India shut down Section 66A, calling it unconstitutional. However, arrests over social media activity continued. In 2016, a Kashmiri man was charged with sedition for liking and sharing anti-India posts on Facebook. The security argument. Amid a tense border standoff with China earlier this year, India's government banned 60 China-based apps, including the popular social media platform TikTok. When border tensions continued, leading to an Indian soldier reportedly being killed by a Chinese landmine, the Indian government restricted 118 more mobile applications from Chinese tech companies in September 2020. The government's statement alleged it had received several reports of these applications misusing user data and surreptitiously transmitting it to servers located outside India. Described as a move to ensure safety, security and sovereignty of Indian cyberspace in the government's September statement, the restrictions took aim at apps from WeChat, Baidu, Alipay and the popular mobile game Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, PUBG, which had over 33 million active users in India at the time. While the restrictions could have been a knee-jerk reaction to a geopolitical situation that has since cooled down, concerns about the integrity of user data and government surveillance on the internet have persisted as India works on the proposed Personal Data Protection Bill, 2019. According to Anirudh Burman, associate fellow at Carnegie India, the draft law, introduced in December 2019, deploys an approach quite similar to the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR. Burman explained that although both frameworks are based on a user consent model, the Indian bill limits data storage outside the country's borders and also creates compliance requirements that could burden small enterprises. If there is a medium or small enterprise firm going to get a data protection officer or get an annual data protection audit, it's a significant cost, Burman said. The draft law's requirement to store certain types of data locally or always have a copy of it available on local servers has also stoked fears of increased state surveillance, according to a report by DW. Requiring platforms to store data locally could also afford easier access to local law enforcement which, if stored offshore, would be subject to a different set of laws. U.S. law permits the disclosure only of non-content data. So if you want detailed subscriber information or content data, then you have to go through the due process, said Burman. Content data here refers to data, processed or unprocessed, that can convey the substance of a communication. The draft bill also provides for the creation of a dedicated body, the Data Protection Authority of India, to ensure compliance with the law. A portion of the legislation also grants the federal government the power to exempt any agency of government from application of the act, thereby creating broad loopholes for the state to duck requirements levied on private enterprises. The draft law, India's first attempt at creating a digital privacy and data management framework at the national level, is currently before a joint parliamentary committee. The committee also recently held discussions on law with representatives from companies including Amazon, Twitter, MasterCard, Visa and PayPal. Reported to be in the final stages of discussion, the committee is expected to file its recommendations on the bill before the next session of Parliament begins. Sisyphus Boulder. Despite the Indian government's efforts to exercise control over cyberspace, internet policing can only go so far. Vikram Subbaraj and Arjun Vijay launched Indian crypto exchange Jiatis in 2018, just a week after the Central Bank of India published a circular that banned crypto firms from having bank accounts. Confronted by the ban, they pivoted to setting up a peer-to-peer exchange. In March 2020, the Supreme Court of India overruled the Central Bank circular and, according to the two founders, Jiatis has enjoyed record growth in the last 6 months. We have been growing at a phenomenal rate of 400% YTD and have been clocking a monthly trade volume of $33 million, Subbaraj told CoinDesk via email. Vijay doesn't believe internet censorship can stop web-based services from continuing to grow in India. Censorship doesn't work with respect to the internet. With VPN and sorts, it just makes it more difficult for you to access something, but it doesn't prevent someone who wants to access it, Vijay told CoinDesk. Even in Kashmir, where students had to make do with government-imposed low-speed internet for their online classes during the coronavirus pandemic, people found workarounds. According to an Al Jazeera report, two applications, Philo and Wise, created by educators Mabeen Masudi and Imbesat Ahmad, helped students access the internet. India's government seems to understand the internet as essential for the country's growth. While authorities sometimes lean towards stringent controls, the government will not completely stamp out digital innovation. This is good news for the crypto industry. As Neeraj Khandelwal, co-founder of local crypto exchange CoinDCX, told CoinDesk, if there is no internet, there is no cryptocurrency, there is no blockchain, there is no technology. The internet is the crux. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.